Hi, everybody. Welcome again to another episode of The Founder Shed. My name's Hamlin. I'm here with Shane. So yeah, welcome to another episode. We're on episode number 4 today, and we're going to be talking a bit about entrepreneurship. So it may be something that you've heard of, maybe not. Everyone's heard of entrepreneurship, but what is entrepreneurship? It's something that Shane and I have been exploring for probably the last year, and it's a really interesting subject. For those of you that don't know, an entrepreneur is someone who thinks and acts like an entrepreneur, but within a organization or company. So it's quite an interesting subject. Shane, when was the first time you heard about entrepreneurship?
This is a really interesting question, right? Because I think a lot of us think about entrepreneurship without actually knowing what it is. And I think about me and you and our journey, right? So if I think about the first time I heard about entrepreneurship, it was probably about a year after I'd actually become an entrepreneur myself. Probably even more, in fact. And what I mean by that is I started off exploring being an entrepreneur by thinking I was going to be an entrepreneur, right? So started off a bit of a side business whilst working at another company. And it was only years later that I really understood the concept of what entrepreneurship really was. So yeah, it's an interesting one. And I think you're probably in the same boat, right?
Yeah, I think one thing that has been quite clear since we've been looking at entrepreneurship is the people that do it really well almost don't really know that that's what they're doing, because it just comes so naturally to them. And those people are almost always entrepreneurial people. So it kind of makes sense that there's a big overlap. And I think if you're naturally an entrepreneurial person, that's exactly what entrepreneurship is about using those skills, but in a, you know, basically saying you don't have to quit your job to use those skills. You can do them inside your job. And so for me, the first time I'd actually heard the word entrepreneurship was when we were working with Van Heroes, both of us. And it was when we were talking to Nationwide, I think, because we had already figured out that by being involved in a startup in our spare time, we were accelerating our learning. And we already realized that because we were both working full-time jobs at the time, we understood that we were taking those skills back into our day jobs. So Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, we're sitting there doing our jobs. And all the time we're using learnings from the startup that we've been doing in our spare time, and vice versa. You know, when we get to work in the evenings and at the weekends, we're using our expertise from our day jobs, and the two form this sort of symbiotic relationship where one is supporting the other. And I think we both understood that quite early on, but we just didn't know that there was a name for it.
Yeah. And it's crazy really, because, you know, by that time we had been effectively entrepreneurs for a couple of years at that point. And, you know, we referred to ourselves as entrepreneurs, but, you know, and there's a lot of similarities between the two, but it's having that safety net almost as well, that you're, you know, you still got your day job or you're still within a large organization. But there are a lot of similarities between the two. And, you know, it's interesting that, yeah, we were a couple of years down the road, and that's how, that shows how little is known about entrepreneurship at the moment, in my opinion. There's, you know, there's lots of people out there who are, you know, entrepreneurs, have lots of good ideas, and they get, you know, just they're afraid to speak up and to explore these things sometimes because they are worried about the view that an organization might take on them, that, you know, they might be a flight risk or anything like this, when none of that actually really exists. It's almost like this invisible barrier we put up against ourselves.
Well, that, I guess that's the other thing. Like, since we've known that this is a thing that's been talked about in the corporate world for like 30 years, you know, it's not a new term. It's been bad around for ages. And when you do your research, you realize that entrepreneurship is like this myth in all these big companies. They're like, oh, it doesn't work. We can't, we've tried and we've never been able to get it to work. And then, but I think that goes hand in hand with the fact that people that are doing it really well don't know that it's a thing. it's like, it's about mindset. If you know it, you need to be able to think like an entrepreneur in order to execute on entrepreneurship. So with that in mind, what do you, in your opinion, what does entrepreneurship mean to you? Like what is the DNA of an entrepreneur? How would you sort of break that down, do you think?
Yeah, so I think one of the key pieces of that is curiosity. And this is something that it's widely reflected across anybody who speaks about entrepreneurship, I think. It's that curiosity. And we find in our lives, we are curious about various different things, whether it's a project that we're doing at home, whether it's a piece of work we're doing in our day job, whether it's an idea that we have. There's an entrepreneur always has that natural curiosity of, okay, well, how do I do that? What can I do for this? How do I do that? And I think that's probably the number one thing that jumped out to me when I look at somebody who I would consider as an entrepreneur. Like if we were looking at people who would be an ideal candidate for anything to do with being an entrepreneur, it's somebody who wants to learn, who wants to evolve, who wants to kind of take that next step and push their ideas forward, if that makes sense. Mm. I don't know. That's kind of my gut feeling on it. That's the one that jumped out to me. What about you?
I would agree. I think curiosity is almost like the first thing that you will just naturally have, is like, is this really the best way we can be doing this? Or it's that thing about going, not being afraid to look beyond your pay grade and be like, but this thing's working over here where I'm sitting, but over there, that's not working very well. And although that's not my job, you still feel a sense of responsibility to that thing. And I think, I think it's a bit of a cross between curiosity, like how does this work? How does that work? But also this kind of, like responsibility. We talk about ownership, thinking like an owner, which is, very entrepreneurial. If you're running a startup or running your own business, or you're thinking like a business owner at all times, you're doing your job, whatever that might be, whether you're marketing or landscaping or a plumber, like you've got your trade, your skill, but then on top of that, you've also got this layer of having to run a business, having to balance the books. So you're not just a whatever you are, you're also an accountant, you're also a CEO, you're also a marketing person, because you've got, and a sales person, because you've got to sell your skills. So
I think that's a really important piece actually to talk about there. And I can give a great example of this, right? So because of the experience that we've had at Van Heroes, where we've been the owners of that business and we're thinking about customers, and we would have done anything for those customers, right? We would have, in fact, there's examples where we did jump in vans to get a job done for those customers, because we didn't want to let people down. And I take those thoughts and I put them into my day job now at Nationwide. And if I look at somebody traditionally in Nationwide who isn't an entrepreneur, what they do is they see it as their job, right? They're a delivery manager. So somebody from above said, I think it would be a great idea to add this particular feature to the app, for example, right? And that feeds down. And then somebody gets given that task and they go do it. There's no question about what actually that is. They might turn around and say, put a duck on as our helper on the app, right? And because somebody from above them has said, go and do that, the message gets fed down and they go and do it. They don't care. That's just their job. They just go and do that. They go and put a duck on the app. Mm. As an entrepreneur, I look at that piece and I have the confidence and the curiosity to turn around and go, well, that doesn't make any sense. Why would we put a duck on the app? That doesn't make any sense. So I question it. And by doing that, I am thinking like an owner, because I'm not just thinking about, well, that doesn't make any sense. I'm also thinking about, if we're going to spend £50,000 to make this change, that's £50,000 that our members are paying us, and for something that doesn't make sense. So it's really important to have entrepreneurs in your business, because they will challenge you, they will be naturally curious, and they will speak up and ask the right questions. And we've seen great examples of this from entrepreneurs we work with, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So with Van Heroes last year, for those that don't know, we actually had an entrepreneurship program where we took on tech grads from within Nationwide Building Society, which are a huge employer in Swindon, where we live. And yeah, so we got a couple of guys who, you know, in fairness, they were just interested in what we were doing. So we invited them along, you know, no obligation, just come along to some of our sessions in the evenings. This was back when we could meet up. And yeah, just sort of, here's what's going on. Feel free to just shadow and watch what we're doing and just observe. And when you feel like you've got a bit of something to say, just jump in, you know, create that environment where everyone's opinion is valued. Just because Shane and I are the owners and it's our baby, it doesn't mean that we don't want to hear other people's opinions. We want to be challenged, you know, because I think that's the other thing, is us realizing that we've been doing this for 2 years, and actually we are always questioning things, but there'll be things that we're missing as well, because we've just got in our head that that's the right way to do it. And that's a lot of where it comes from, is not being able to see the wood from the trees and actually having fresh eye. I mean, anybody that's, when you hire someone new into a business, you always have that for a few months where they're like, they're challenging things and they're being like, why do we do it this way? And why do we do it that way? But what happens is that goes away really quickly if they're always being met with, well, we always do it that way. And, you know, that's just the way things are around here. And that's just the politics. And you'll never, you know, we tried doing that before and it didn't work. So, you know, although you might have that energy and that curiosity always, it takes stamina to keep challenging things. And it takes for someone to recognize that's a really good suggestion. Let's explore it. And if it doesn't work, then we know it doesn't work that time round. But it's so important how that curiosity is received by the business, I guess.
Yeah. And that's another piece, right? Entrepreneurship, although it's often kind of seen as something that happened on the ground, so to speak, it also needs to be understood and accepted by more senior people as well, because otherwise those ideas just keep getting put to bed. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that needs to be explored as well. And, you know, it's not something that we need to kind of talk about now, but it's really important that entrepreneurship is, you know, supported from the whole organization. Otherwise it will never happen. And, you know, we can talk about some of those examples later, actually, because I know we've got some great examples of things like PlayStation, as a great example, where if that wasn't supported, these would, you know, just die. So I think that's a really interesting point. And let's pick up on that a bit later. But in the short term, while we're on the subject of kind of what makes an entrepreneur, what do you think is the difference between an entrepreneur then and an entrepreneur? Because this is a good one as well.
Yeah, so when I think about, I mean, immediately I try and think about myself and my own experience, because I've worked in companies, but I've also worked freelance. We've also done the startup, obviously. So I've got experience of being out as a lone wolf. And I think for me, the difference I feel is about having more people to work with, because although you've got the same values, the environment that you're applying those values in is very different. Like when you're an entrepreneur, the odds are the buck starts and stops with you. Especially if you're a founder of a company, you know, you decide what you're going to do and then you can just go and do it. The challenge with being an entrepreneur is you don't always have that freedom. You can challenge things and you can be curious, but you know, if a manager doesn't sign it off, it won't happen. So I think and because of that, I think that some entrepreneurs or entrepreneurial minded people aren't actually very good at collaborating, because they get used to just being the one that has to do everything. So I think it comes really naturally to some people, and it's for others, it's something that they develop as they grow their teams. You know, they're forced to let go of things. You know, imagine if you started a company by yourself, it must be really difficult to slow as it gets bigger, which is what you want, to slowly have to let go of things. I think as an entrepreneur, if you're starting in a big organization, that's already got teams and it's already got structure, part of the challenge is, yes, it is understanding value. It is being able to wear different hats. It is being able to think like an owner and maintain that curiosity. But I think another really key differentiator is that collaboration. It almost is more important with an entrepreneur than it is for an entrepreneur. You know, an entrepreneur within a team, within a business, they've got to be able to understand other people. They've got to be able to share their ideas. They've got to be able to get other people excited to share that ownership, because it's got to be coming from a team. I think that the worst thing is when there's like an ego attached to every good idea. It's like, I came up with this idea, therefore if I don't do it, then I don't want anybody else to do it, sort of thing.
It's the worst thing that you can have, right? Like if you're egotistical about that stuff, a lot of the times you will fail, because you can't bring these things to life on your own. Like, you know, if I go back to Van Heroes, right? Like, yeah, I had the initial idea, but that initial idea could not have got off the ground without you, because I had no design capabilities. It couldn't have got off the ground without Mark and Trevor either, who joined and helped with the development of it, right? You have to share those ideas, and that will bring these things to life.
Yeah, and we've talked about that before as well, about, you know, when you're just starting something, or you know, it's all about like not being afraid to share those ideas, because people aren't out there to steal those ideas. They want to help make them happen. And I think that's it. It's like realizing that an idea is bigger than the sum of its parts. And actually, the more people that work on it, and as long as it's being managed, then it's got a lot more potential to be successful. So I think that obviously collaboration is important for both entrepreneurs and intrapreneurs, but it in a weird way, I feel like it's almost more important when you start, as it's something that's always got to be there. Whereas for an entrepreneur, you might be able to get away with it before you're really called up on it. The only time you've really got to start considering the way you collaborate is when you start working with other people and growing your business. And for some entrepreneurs, that comes quite a bit after they've had their success. You know, I see loads of startup businesses where their sales pitch is basically, this company was founded by me and I'm an amazing person, so you should buy this product because I'm this amazing founder. And it's like, you know, people buy into stories. That's why they like, you know, Tesla, and because there's something there. There's an enigma about the person behind it. But there does have to be a separation. And it's, you know, you've got to almost democratize that progress. It's like everyone's taking part in it. Especially if you want to encourage other people to be entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
It's, you know.
Yeah. So my view, I completely agree with everything you say there, but I also have another one. And for me, it's that safety. And this is another big one as to the difference between an entrepreneur and an entrepreneur, right? So if I look at my own personal circumstances right now, I'm a 33-year-old guy, you know, with a wife who's currently on mat leave and two kids and loads of bills and all the rest of it, right? I can't take that leap of faith to become an entrepreneur at the moment, because it's too risky for me to leave that safety that I've got to pay those bills for my family. My family has to come first, right? Whereas if I was either younger, living at home, or a lot older with more money in the bank, it might be a bit different. But for me, my circumstances also push me in a direction where I need that safety of like a day job. But I don't want to give up on those ideas that I've got and the creativity that I've got inside me. I want to express all of that. And I'm very, very lucky that I've got a day job that allows me to do that and that appreciates the mindset that I have and that I can bring in, you know, without stifling it. And I think that's another really important one. And, you know, that's just one example from me about how I feel. But there are other people who might be in a position where they, you know, they don't necessarily need a day job, but they want that safety of having people around them who can support them with those ideas rather than going at it solo, for example, like you touched on. Mm. So you know, that's also another big one for me, is that safety net of, you know, that warmth and comfort almost around you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense, and is quite obvious as well. Because some people, if they're very entrepreneurial minded, will have a very different attitude to risk to some other people. Yes. Who are like, I like my day job. I'm probably always going to have a day job, but I am curious and I do think like that, and I do have that responsibility. It's like, you know, you might never leave your job and start a startup or start a company, but that doesn't mean you aren't an entrepreneurial person. Like, you can still have those qualities. And that's kind of what this is all about, is like, how do you use those qualities? So, you just talking then about that sort of perception of like, well, if I don't leave my job, I can't be an entrepreneur. I think, you know, I think that's a key part of why entrepreneurship as a concept isn't more common. Because it's like a difference in perception about like what an entrepreneur is. And like, if you're not an entrepreneur, then you're just a normal person doing their job and getting on with it in the world and finding their way. And there is actually like a weird like middle ground, but it's not really been defined enough. I mean, we've talked about this loads. Why do you think entrepreneurship isn't more common?
Yeah, really good question. I think there's two parts to this, right? And part of it sits with the entrepreneurs themselves. And that part is about those entrepreneurs being afraid to kind of say and put their hands up and say, hey, I'm an entrepreneur, because there's a perception around it that if you say I'm an entrepreneur, people think, hey, you're a flight risk, you're only here for a quick thing and you're off in a minute. So they, you know, they have that natural worry. And then on the flip side, you also have like organizations where they don't invest in entrepreneurs because they don't understand it. Like, they've never experienced that mindset themselves, and so they don't necessarily understand it. So to me, there's kind of two parts to this question. And I think, yeah, if I talk about the first one, and maybe you want to pick up the second one.
Yeah, I was going to say, why don't we just drill into each of those things? Because I think they're both really valid, and we both, you know, got experience in those things.
Yeah, so for me then, so if I pick up the one around the individuals, I think, yeah, because there's a bit of a stigma around this, and we've both experienced this, where when I was job hunting, right, and I was made redundant, and I'm out on the job market, and I'm looking and speaking to agencies, recruitment agencies, 90% of them, 95% of them said to me, don't put anything to do with like van heroes on your CV. And I was like, okay, fine. They were like, it's going to scare people off. They're going to think you're not interested in actually working for them. You just want a paycheck, and you're going to put all your efforts into this. And so I took that advice from them. Funnily enough, none of the jobs that they put me forward for, I didn't get any of those jobs. The couple that I put van heroes on about piqued a lot of people's interests. And it really changed my mindset, because when I started to speak to people about the entrepreneurial traits that I had and the entrepreneurial mindset, I saw that it was actually really valued, and it really changed my perception. But prior to that, I was afraid to do that. And now, if I was ever in a position again where I needed to go out job hunting, one of the first things I would put on there is about my entrepreneurial mindset, entrepreneurial traits, and talk about those, because I see a lot of value in it, and that's been reflected where I am now. But there's still a stigma around that, and that puts a lot of people off. And I think that is a lot of the reasons why big ideas die and people don't follow through with those traits. So that's my personal view. But yeah, let's talk about the other side then. And if I pass this one over to you then, so how do you see it from a organizational point of view?
I think you have to be a certain type of person to, firstly, I understand that entrepreneurship is a thing that you need in your business, and then to actually be able to find a way to make that work. I mean, because we asked that question, you know, so we both went through what you just talked about putting startup experience on your CV and always feeling like, oh, maybe I shouldn't put it on there because it's going to scare people off. And then at the same time going, actually, no, like, you know, stuff that I'm putting it on there because I'm really proud of this. And I put a lot of my energy into this. It is a skill. I've got skills from this. Like, I'd be fooling myself if I was pretending that this was not worth anything and it didn't make me better at my job or the jobs that I can do for these companies. So firstly, yeah, we've both been through that. And when we discovered about entrepreneurship, it's an actual thing that people have been talking about since like the 80s and 90s. And we're like, why are more companies not like, why is there still this mindset of like being almost being afraid of entrepreneurial people? You know, I remember working for, so, you know, we've both been through this thing where we now will only work at a company that values that entrepreneurial mindset because that's who we are. And, you know, it's like, we have to be true to ourselves that we can't stop thinking like that. So the companies we work for have to A, know that we're like that, and B, want us to be like that. They see that as a value. But even then, I've worked at companies before where they want the entrepreneurial mindset because they want you to be able to take on more responsibility and be able to, you tend to find it as well in smaller companies where people do have to wear more hats. But even then, you know, I've heard things like there's only room for one entrepreneur in the organization because you don't, you know, there's still that fear that it's going to derail everyone from this mission. And I just think that, you know, what that says to me is there's not enough clarity as to what everyone is trying to achieve together collectively. And I think that's the challenge when you've got a massive organization, like let's use like Nationwide as an example, you know, huge organization, been around for ages. They need to have a really clear like mission about like what their purpose is and what they're trying to achieve, because that allows everyone to pull towards the same goal. I think that we touched on earlier that entrepreneurship comes naturally to entrepreneurial people. The best example I can think of this is Apple and Steve Jobs, because people talk about Apple all the time in the business world, but for good reason, because they really are innovative. And especially when you consider that he was doing this stuff in the 80s, which, like, you know, 40 years ago, he was doing entrepreneurship. So there's an amazing video on YouTube. We'll put it out on the Founder Shed LinkedIn. It's so good. And it's a documentary from the 80s. And the example I want to talk about is the Macintosh team. So IBM, at the time, IBM had released this PC, which was like the answer to the Apple II, which was the breakthrough computer of its time. And IBM were this big growing threat. So, and Steve Jobs is sitting there going, IBM are a huge, huge company with way more resources than us. And we are a smaller company with 6,000 people. And he could only see that as an advantage. He was like, that means we've got a better odd at beating them because we can do things differently. And the way they did it with the Macintosh team is they took the Macintosh design team, they put them in a separate building away from the rest of Apple, and basically gave them all the resources they would need to just work like a team in a garage, you know, and get that founder mindset into them. So it feels like there's just five of them meeting up secretly working on it, but actually it's engineered that way so that they can innovate as much as possible and not get tied down by the bureaucracy of Apple, which was at the time a growing company. You know, it had filed an IPO, it had gone public. So it was becoming a big company, but they knew how important it was to keep that mindset of we need to be tinkering away over here and building it. Yes. So the Macintosh was a big success, and in the video, you can see they're all in this building. They've all got these red t-shirts on. They actually literally have a pirate flag flying outside the building. But the genius of it for me is that once that was successful, Steve Jobs then said, well, what we're going to do now is model processes within Apple on that. So every product team then started working in that way. The way they manufactured, when they manufactured the Macintosh, they did it a completely different way. And then they then learned from that and started applying it and started scaling it and growing it. And also setting an example for everybody else in the organization. Like, when you work in this way, you achieve amazing results. And every member of that team was commended. I think in the original Macintosh, behind the screen, they had a piece of paper which had the signatures of all the team. And it's just, it's that idea that, you know, this isn't one person's vision. It's like all these people owned this and took part in this. And yeah, you know, everybody else in the company is going like, I want to build something where my signature's on it.
It's a really cool story, that. And let's make sure we've got that link in for people as well, so they can find it, because it is an absolutely brilliant story. And it's also, just as you were talking about that, it's also just got me thinking again about Nationwide, right? And I'm naturally going to think about this because that's where my day job is. But the mindsets that, and the environments that they're trying to create there now are very, very entrepreneurial. They're trying to set the environments there, but without actually fundamentally looking at, you know, how do we build this mindset? It's just an environment at the moment. So if I look at our very latest building, so Nationwide just invested millions building a new office space called Round 3 House here in Swindon. It's very, very different to any of the other offices that we have. All the other offices are very kind of corporate and really old school, kind of, you know, 90s, 2000 corporate. And if I look at Ramsbury House, they have like this nice auditorium, like really kind of Roman style, you know, people can sit out and they can talk, and it's collaborative, and it's very different to any of the other spaces. So they're trying to create that environment for it. So they obviously understand the value of this entrepreneurial mindset. They're creating that environment, but there's still a long way to go to organizations to really unlock the entrepreneurs that they already have. And that's the really key thing here, right? Like, it's not about creating entrepreneurs. It's about unlocking what you already have. Like, these people are already in your organization.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, everybody grows up with these great ideas, and, you know, we can all build castles out of Lego and dragons and all sorts. We're naturally, as a human race, we're naturally curious and creative. And it's only in later life that we stifle that, and, you know, it all just gets bottled up and put away. And so we're obviously trying to unlock this, but we need to work on, you know, how do we unlock the talent that we've got there already?
Yeah, yeah. And you just said something which I want to talk about a bit, because you said that how in later life you can end up becoming quite stifled. And I think that it's a defense mechanism. Like, you feel like you need to protect yourself to stay in that good job, to stay secure, and to, you know, just do what the boss tells me, kind of thing. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. It, if anything, it shows that actually it's the businesses and the organizations that need to address that, because that's the key thing that we see with entrepreneurship. When people are talking about entrepreneurship, they're telling these amazing stories about Steve Jobs and Apple and the PlayStation story, which we'll get onto in a minute. But it's like, you know, and then I've seen YouTube videos where people are like, why you should become an entrepreneur. And it's like, the onus isn't on the individual. The odds are, if you're an entrepreneurial person, you're already doing those things, you might just be meeting quite a bit of resistance because the company isn't ready for it. They're not in the right mindset to create an environment for you to really succeed with that. And that's where the opportunity is for businesses to understand that this is a real thing that can be used to, you know, actually get people innovating and collaborating better. And especially in the larger businesses, you know, smaller businesses, it's a little more common because people are having to wear multiple hats and having to work together closer. But in the bigger organizations where one person's over here in a silo and one person's over here in a silo, and you might never meet each other, but you're all collaborating towards one project, it's like, that is where entrepreneurship really comes into its own. Because not everybody in the company has to be an entrepreneur for there to be a culture of entrepreneurship. You know, even if you had one in five people thinking that way and being empowered to work that way, you know, you'd see results. I think so much of it is about this perception that, oh, I'll just become an entrepreneur and just start doing that in my day job. But the reason you probably haven't been able to do that, or possibly the reason you might not feel that fulfilled in a job, is because you've got this curiosity and you've got those ideas and you want to push those things, but the business isn't actually ready to let you do that, or they don't have the right mindset to know how important that is.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's the onus is definitely on the organizations to create an environment where it is welcomed, rather than you trying to force that through yourself. And it's in their best benefits as well, because how many ideas get lost because people are afraid to speak up? You know, and instead, right, you might have people in your organization who have already come up with the next PlayStation, right? But they are afraid to speak up and all the rest of it. So you lose that idea, and then somebody else will go and do that, or they'll go elsewhere where that is valued and they'll do it for somebody else. So let's speak about that that example that you were just saying about.
I'll talk about it now. I think, but it's a perfect example though, because in every example of entrepreneurship, you have these brilliant people, but it's always about the risk the businesses took, because ultimately with entrepreneurship, it's the businesses that gain from it. You know, with entrepreneurship, the individual is taking the risk, but the individual is gaining from it. With entrepreneurship, the business is taking the risk, but ultimately it's the business that's going to innovate and win and build a new product. So let's talk about PlayStation. So in the late 80s, early 90s, Sony, which is a Japanese company, at the time they were doing lots of stuff with music discs and CDs. So a relatively junior employee called Ken Kutaragi was working at Sony, and he was watching his daughter play on the Nintendo, I think it was the SNES or the NES, Nintendo games console, and or Famicom, I think it might have been. And he basically realized that the sound chip could be made better to enable it to be a more powerful console. And at the time, Sony were just not interested in games and the games market. So he actually started working on this in secret for Nintendo, because he knew that this is something that they would actually care about. So he built this amazing chip, which actually went into their next console and is actually in there. And when Sony found out about this, they were furious, and you know, he nearly got fired. And the CEO of Sony stepped in and went, hold on a minute, I really admire the initiative that he's taken here. Let's just keep him on and see where this goes for us, because you know, we could use a bit of that. And funnily enough, because he had built this thing for Nintendo and they shipped out this console with the new sound chip, it was really successful, they had a good relationship with Ken Kutaragi. So they would then started speaking to him, saying how, because they knew he worked for Sony, saying, we're interested in bringing out a console that has a compact disc instead of a cartridge, because they're cheaper to produce. And Sony at the time were the experts in CD-ROMs and discs. So Sony and Nintendo actually entered into a little partnership to develop this console, which was originally going to be called the PlayStation, two words. And basically, long story short, the partnership fell apart because Nintendo said, we're going to go over with Philips and work with them. And they binned off Sony, and it was like a massive betrayal. So again, Ken Kutaragi is there before the Sony executives, thinking, I'm going to lose my job for sure, because we've entered into this risky deal and it's not worked out. And again, the CEO of Sony stepped in and went, it's not his fault that happened. Nintendo betrayed us. So what we need to do now is make a better product. So he said to Ken, I want you to be in charge of, you know, building this console, this PlayStation. So he went away, and he said he spent 6 months working on the design for the PlayStation, and which then launched, and it focused on 3D games. It used the CD-ROM, and as we all know, it was like define a generation of gaming. And as soon as they launched it and it was a massive success, the CEO of Sony created a subsidiary company, Sony Computer Entertainment, and he made Ken Kutaragi the president, CEO of that. And he stayed in the company and was responsible for the PlayStation 2, the PlayStation 3. And he's actually referred to as the father of the PlayStation because, you know, like, now he's celebrated for it. But at the time, it was like, it so nearly didn't happen. And it wouldn't have happened if that CEO hadn't have said, actually, this is valuable, what he's doing. Like, he may not be doing it the right way, and he may be going behind our backs, but that's because he believes in something, and actually we just need to give him a platform to
die. Yeah, and that's, I love that story, right? That's probably my favorite story. And I'll tell you for why, and I'll just wrap it up quickly because, you know, we're pushing 40 minutes now. So
my timer went on my phone locked and I can't even see the timer. So yeah.
We've had a really great conversation on this, right? But one of the reasons why I love that story is because it shows how valuable these people are, right? And if the CEO of Sony hadn't stepped in and recognized Ken at that point, either he would have lost Ken to another company, right?
Yeah.
Or alternatively, Ken's ideas would have been stifled and Sony PlayStation would have never existed. And from Ken's perspective, the career acceleration that he had, by standing up, speaking up, being confident about what he was doing, that career acceleration took him from a really, really junior position to being the father of the Sony PlayStation, right? Like, how amazing is that? That really shows you the power of entrepreneurs within your business. And so I think that's a great position just to wrap up on, really.
Yeah, I was just going to say, there's a saying that you said, and it's something along the lines of, a company saying, what happens if we take them on and train them and they leave?
I can't remember who said it, but it was basically, somebody questions and says, well, what happens if we invest all this time in, you know, helping these people and they leave? And the CEO turns around, or the HR director turns around and says, well, what happens if we don't?
It's
that simple, right? Like, you know, you have to invest. If you invest in people, they will want to continue that journey with you. I truly believe that. If you don't, they will look to explore those opportunities elsewhere. How many times have people, I mean, I've been a hiring manager before, and so many times when you ask somebody, well, you know, why are you looking for a new position? And they'll turn around and say, because of lack of career progression.
Yeah.
Because people aren't investing in them.
Yeah, they're not investing in them, or they took a job thinking it was going to take them somewhere, or there's going to be all these opportunities, and actually it's just something that they said to get them in the door. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, absolutely. People are ambitious and people want to drive. And if you're not going to value that as a business, someone else out there will snap it up. They'll take them on. There's so many success stories like that. You can't count them. But, yeah, no,
I was going to say, yeah, I think that's a great place to wrap up on, mate. And, you know, so just before we close, if people are interested in hearing a bit more about entrepreneurship, obviously both of us are on LinkedIn and, you know, we talk about entrepreneurship on there quite regularly because we also have this side company, which is the Entrepreneurship Project, where we're really trying to champion this. And I would highly recommend anybody who's interested in hearing a bit more about this to go on and follow us on LinkedIn and follow the project on LinkedIn, because we've got some really big stuff happening in that space, including an event that we'll be talking about in the coming months as well. So,
yeah, it's basically, if you are an entrepreneur, an individual, and you think, yeah, that sounds a bit like me, talk to us. If you're a business owner, a HR manager, anyone who thinks that you can maybe make this stuff happen or at least start a conversation about this in your business, then talk to us about it as well. And we'd love to share our story with you.
Yeah, talking is free, right? We're not in this to take money off people for talking. We want to encourage entrepreneurship. Come and talk to us. We'll tell you about the program if you want to hear about the program. But also, if you're somebody in an organization already that just wants to understand how to maybe approach your manager about, you know, your entrepreneurship thoughts, just come and talk to us. Like, you know, we'd love to hear your stories. We'd love to share our experiences. And we look forward to speaking to you all.
Cool. Well, that'll about do it. Thank you for joining us for another exciting episode of The Founder Shared, and we'll see all you guys very soon.